Oklahomans are now finally starting to dry out after May brought as much as 2 feet of rain to some parts of the state. The tornadoes and flooding that killed dozens of people in Oklahoma and its southern neighbor last month were a reminder of just how cruel May can be when warming temperatures and moist Gulf air collide over the nation's midsection.
I mean, I grew up here and I knew exactly what they were feeling whenever, you know, they're seeing these storms come through. People in Oklahoma have such, you know, a unique relationship with the weather in terms of that they love it and they admire it, but it also scares them to death a lot of the time.
2015's series of storms followed a quiet 2014, but the year before, two of the worst tornadoes ever recorded hit Moore and Oklahoma City. The May 20th, 2013 storm killed 25 people, including 7 children at Plaza Towers Elementary School and one woman who succumbed to her injuries months later. Less than 2 weeks after that, then-record flash flooding killed several more people across a community still weary from the worst storm in nearly 15 years.
I worry about the people in Moore because they're so strong and they try to be so resilient and they rebuild again and again, but it's the emotional and the invisible damage that's harder to overcome.
Holly Bailey tells the stories of those two storms in her book, The Mercy of the Sky, and she joins us today on Oklahoma Voices. She's a national correspondent for Yahoo News and covered the war in Iraq and the response to Hurricane Katrina as Newsweek's White House correspondent. Holly Bailey, welcome to Oklahoma Voices.
Oh, thanks for having me.
One of the things that a lot of the people you talked to had in common was they all remember their first storm. It's the one that got them hooked on severe weather and led them to dedicate their lives to it. So I want to start by asking you, what's your first storm?
Wow. There's so many that I remember when I was a kid. I used to spend a lot of time with my grandmother, and we would stand out on the porch and watch them roll in from the west. But I guess the first big storm I remember is the Edmond tornado in 1986. I was in South Oklahoma City, not anywhere close to it, but I was watching on television. Gary England was on air, and it was the first one that I remember just being scared out of my mind of what's going to happen.
And this is just a limited area of Southeast 15th and Santa Fe, just moments after the tornado moved through that part of Edmond as it was moving to the north-northeast at about 25 to 35 miles per hour. Fortunately, there looks like only some fence damage, and looks like maybe some roof damage over there, tree damage. That's once again Southeast 15th and Santa Fe that was taken. Let's go live to Randy.
And I just thought it was the scariest thing I'd ever seen. And then come to find out later, it was only, 200 or something yards wide, which is not very big at all. But to me, as a kid, it was ginormous.
So fast forward 27 years later to 2013 from 1986. What inspired you to write this book about the May 20th, 2013 Moore tornado?
I didn't set out to write a book. I was in New York and sitting at my desk at Yahoo News, and I looked up and there was a helicopter shot of the tornado on the ground heading towards Moore. And I immediately said to all, everybody in the room, including my editor, this looks just like this tornado. First of all, I said, that's where I'm from. And then I said, this looks just like a tornado that hit in 1999. It's the same exact spot. And I was really blown away by just how similar it was. So we're sitting there in New York watching this storm heading right towards Moore, a place where I'd gone to school and my family lived. My mother lives very close to there. And so I was calling my mom and watching the storm. And we made this decision to sort of scramble to get there. And I couldn't get a flight out that night, but I flew out the first thing that morning. And I remember it was a connecting flight from Chicago, and we passed over the storm path and you could just see it clear as day. And I had covered, disasters before. I had traveled to the Gulf Coast with George W. Bush after Hurricane Katrina. I'd covered some of Hurricane Sandy stuff. I'd seen war zones, but there's nothing like going back and seeing a place where you grew up and places where you recognize just torn apart by a storm.
And what did you encounter when you set foot in Moore for the first time?
It was very tricky to get into Moore. I remember landing at the airport and it was just swarming with reporters and every rental car was gone. And The only thing left was a Toyota Prius. I remember this very clearly. And I, you know, would try to figure out a way to get to Moore. So I drove down Interstate 44 and decided to crowd across on Southwest 149th Street, which is where, you know, the path of storm really began. And so I'm driving this tiny car, and there's still trees down on the road and power lines down. And at one point, I remember pulling the car over and driving through the field. So if anybody ever wonders if you can get, you know, a Toyota Prius through some thick fields, you can, most definitely. But I really started my reporting there. I came across this neighborhood along 149th Street in South May in Oklahoma City, and people were just standing out in front of their houses, stunned.
And that's just to the west of Briarwood,
yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I want to pick up on something you just said about some of the previous coverage you've done. You mentioned Hurricane Katrina and being in New Orleans with President Bush. You've also covered the Boston Marathon bombing trial. And you even started your career covering the Oklahoma City bombing for CNN 20 years ago while you were still a student at OU. Were there any lessons you learned from covering those tragedies and disasters that you were able to apply to your reporting on the Moore and El Reno tornadoes 2 years ago?
I think the first thing you learn, and it's just sort of a universal rule as a reporter, is that you have to be able to keep your emotions in check, even in the face of stories that are just so horrifying. And that was one thing that I found a little tough doing with this book, is because I felt so close to all these people. I mean, I grew up here and I knew what they were feeling whenever, you know, they're seeing these storms come through, and also just the relationship with the weather. I think people in Oklahoma have such, you know, a unique relationship with the weather in terms of that they love it and they admire it, but it also scares them to death a lot of the time. But still, you know, you don't leave. And you know, sort of when I started writing this book and interviewing people, it was hard to hear so many stories. And this was sort of similar to you know, previous stories I've covered. You just sort of have to have this sort of emotional distance, but it's very hard. And it was especially hard with this story.
And there are people and names that are so familiar to Oklahomans, names that are familiar to people who follow severe weather every spring, people like Gary England and Rick Smith from the National Weather Service. And the way you evoked their emotions and what they were feeling on that day, it was very, very powerful. And I came away from the book feeling like I knew these people even better. How were you able to convey that?
I really felt like it was important. I mean, to go back, I mean, I when I was in Oklahoma covering the storms, I was really just, you know, writing stories and writing it for Yahoo and trying to explain to people. I kept getting questions from people on the East Coast and on the West Coast, too, of why do people in Oklahoma stay in this place where, you know, severe weather can really literally take away everything you own or kill you every spring. And so whenever I, you know, I, as this sort of continued in writing these stories, I decided, you know, maybe this is the time to tell the story of just how unique weather is in Oklahoma, but also just the resilience that people had that day. And I really wanted to evoke what it was like for these people. I think you see in Oklahoma, you watch Gary England or any of the local meteorologists on television, and you sort of, they're so calm and they're just sort of telling you what to do and to be safe, but you never understand the sort of emotions that they're feeling behind the scenes and the pressure that they feel to keep people safe. I mean, it's somewhat overwhelming, and it's not even just Gary England. It's everybody that is involved. People at the city of Moore and Rick Smith. I mean, it's just a huge responsibility to keep people safe. And so I really wanted to just get to that and tell that story of something that maybe people didn't know.
And there are two people in the book that I think really characterize that. One is Gary England, who you just mentioned, and the other is mobile radar scientist Howard Bluestein. And they were feeling those emotions I think a lot of Oklahomans can identify with, that the excitement and the passion of the science and chasing storms versus their fear of their destructive power. How do you reconcile that?
Well, you know, Howard Bluestein had a great answer for all of this. I mean, he's been chasing storms, you know, for longer than many of us have been alive. I mean, he's like the foremost expert on tornadoes, and he's been so close to them and been sometimes a little too close. I mean, he told me a story about, you know, driving down the street and seeing a house blown away right in front of him. And he even talked about just sort of the emotions you feel And on one hand, you're excited because you're a scientist and you're so close to these storms and you're getting all this data that someday can, you know, help save people's lives. But then there's also the emotion of knowing that you're watching a storm destroy people's lives at the same time you're getting all this data. And so he talked a little bit about, you know, just, you know, the conflicting emotions that he sometimes feels with that. But, you know, it's the same, I think, for anybody. You know, there's this adrenaline you feel when you see the weather and you see storms developing, and it's, you're excited to sort of watch this marvel of nature happen before you. I mean, it's incredible and it's beautiful, but it's just so dangerous. And so there's, I think people have a bit of a conflict about that within themselves.
One of the things I loved about this book was the way you approached the storytelling. It's a chronological narrative, and you spent most of your time on the May 20th tornado. There were a lot of cliffhangers to end each chapter. Tell me a little bit about your writing style on this project.
Well, the whole goal was to sort of tell the story of weather culture in Oklahoma through the lens of what happened on May 20th. And I wanted to sort of, you know, with Gary England, and when I was a kid, I was obsessed with the weather wars. and you know, I think anybody here that is in Oklahoma that has observed that has been somewhat amused at times, the battle over who has the best radar and you know, who has the best picture, and just sort of that was really entertaining to me as a kid, as a young kid, actually. And so I wanted to sort of, I started out the book, you know, with Gary England knowing, waking up and knowing that bad storms are probably going to come. I mean, there have been, as people remember, there had been several days of bad weather preceding that. There had been, you know, warnings out that it was probably going to be a bad day that Monday. And Gary England woke up, you know, and he spoke to me about how in the spring that he barely sleeps because there's just, he feels so much anxiety in some ways about the storms. And so, you know, I wake up with him in the morning and sort of, but then through him, I tell the story of local weather and just how everything that you see in weather coverage across the country began here in Oklahoma City, and largely because of Gary England. And then I just progressed throughout the day of meeting people and more, and them waking up, and, you know, this town that has been hit so many times, and then, you know, just continue flowing that way. And so I just, you know, in the style, I wanted to go chronological through the day, but also just use that as this way to tell the larger picture of people's backstories.
I want to spend some time delving into the specifics of your book, and I'd like to start with the day before May 20th. You kind of alluded to it just now. I think a lot of people forget about that May 19th Shawnee and Bethel Acres tornado that killed two people. Remind us what the mood was like in the state the day after that storm, so the morning of May 20th.
Well, everybody was full of anxiety because, one, nobody really knew what the toll from that storm was the night before. On one hand, you know, some people were, you know, excited. Howard Bluestein and his team had been able to get basically an X-ray of that tornado, and which was great for, you know, research. But then there was also people worried about, you know, we didn't know what the toll was, and just I think it's sort of evocative of May in Oklahoma. People, you know, there had been this tornado the night before. There's word of more tornadoes, and they worried about something, you know, worse coming.
If you're south of I-40 and east of I-44 today, you need to have a very heightened state of awareness and be very super alert to severe weather. We are expecting conditions today to be just as volatile, if not even more so than they were yesterday for tornadoes. We've already had one EF4 tornado confirmed that occurred yesterday near Shawnee. I would not be at all surprised to have similar tornadoes occurring today south of I-40, east of I-44. Now, we're not trying to freak people out or scare you. We want you to be prepared. We're not guaranteeing a pinpoint forecast that this is definitely going to happen, but you need to plan as if it is and be ready for what you're going to do.
And so there was just this anxiety of people cleaning up, but also looking to the sky because they know something else is coming.
Let's go back to the weather wars that you just mentioned a few minutes ago. And you spent a chapter talking about televised meteorology, specifically the big three names of Gary England, Mike Morgan from Channel 4, and then the transition between Rick Mitchell and Damon Lane at KOCO Channel 5. What I found fascinating about that chapter was the relationship between TV and the National Weather Service. They didn't always work together as well as they do now. What can you tell me about how that evolved?
Well, this all kind of started with Gary England when he was, you know, in his early days at Channel 9. He, you know, it's hard to believe if you think back, you know, decades ago that the word tornado was at one point banned from television because people, the government worried that somebody saying tornado on television would cause mass panic. And so there was very little warning about storms that hit regularly, you know, around the 1940s and 50s. And so Gary England grew up in that era, and he grew up right as the dawn of television was happening in Oklahoma City. And so when he joined Channel 9, he just I think one thing that's different about weather in Oklahoma is that the people on television here don't just think of themselves as TV personalities. They think of themselves as almost mini scientists or somebody that's doing a public service. They really feel passionately about trying to get word out about storms. They feel like it's life or death and that, you know, it is just they have to do anything they can. And so when Gary England was at Channel 9 in the early days, he was frustrated by the fact that first of all, he was the first person to ever get a Doppler radar for a commercial television station. He was the first person in the United States to use it to forecast a tornado. And so he was the first to do that. And so when he had this technology, first of all, he didn't really know how to use it at first. And so he kind of learned. But then when he was on air, he would see these storms develop. And he would wait for the National Weather Service to say a warning, and he got frustrated by how slow they were, in his opinion, and so he would jump the gun, which, you know, did not sit very well with the National Weather Service. And so there's always been sort of that tension between the desire of TV people to sort of get the word out and quickly versus what the official word is. And so, yeah, I mean, I think they do have a better relationship, a much better relationship now. I mean, it was a lot of tension back in those days and fighting, especially between Gary England and the National Weather Service.
And how did it get to the point where it is now, to where, you know, people like Rick Smith are in communication with the TV folks and, you know, we have constant communication going on? It's just a very positive relationship now. What got it to that point?
I think that it was kind of on both sides. Both sides realized that they need each other in many ways. And I also think that part of it is that the National Weather Service started to realize how important television is to what they're trying to do. I mean, if you go over to the National Weather Service, you know, they have a bank of television screens in which they're watching TV. And, they don't have enough manpower to have everybody, like, eyes on that storm the way television people do. And so in many ways, you know, what TV is doing is also benefiting what they're doing. And so I think that that's sort of, you know, been part of the thaw, to put it lightly. But, you know, I think it's been something on both sides. They do realize that they need each other in some ways, because there's been a lot of debate about, you know, and there's still tension over how, you know, if you see a tornado sort of developing on radar and you're a television meteorologist, should you say that or should you wait for the official word? And, you know, you can tell when watching coverage that some of these folks really can't bear to wait. And there was actually, you know, a few weeks ago, I'm sure everyone knows, I mean, on March 25th, there was a point where there was not even a warning on a storm and Moore, and people watched the tornado drop down on television.
Moore. That's where that is right now. Power flashes, multiple power flashes. It is on the ground near West Moore High School. Right now, it is a confirmed tornado on the ground. There is no tornado warning from the Weather Service, but I promise you, that is a tornado on the ground right now.
It is so, I think that was one of the, just again, a reminder that, you know, that TV people play an important role, and I think the National Weather Service does realize that.
And there was actually a point in your book where you called the role TV stations played a moment of triumph for severe weather coverage. What did you mean by that?
I just think if you look at the way weather is, I mean, 20 years ago, just going back to that Edmond tornado, you know, Gary England was warning about that storm, but you didn't really know it was hitting until they saw it hitting, like they saw it hit a house. But now it's just you see these storms, you see them coming for, you know, sometimes hours. I mean, they have it, you know, they trace them coming up that path, you know, through Chickasha and Bridge Creek, up towards Moore and South Oklahoma City. I mean, it's just the way that people cover the storms here is so incredible. And even if it's, you know, you do have those rare cases like that tornado that hit Moore in March, but most of the time you have such extraordinary advance notice of these things that you can really prepare yourself. And that was non-existent, you know, 20 years ago.
As I prepared for this conversation, I actually went back and watched some of the severe weather coverage from that day, specifically Channel 9 and Gary England.
Go to David Payne. Let's go. David, go ahead.
Come on.
David.
Please move. Come on.
David, go.
Let's go.
Go, David.
Okay, we'll go get back.
I see a tornado on the ground right there, southwest. There it is. David, we'll keep your video up. We can see the debris cloud.
Right in the center of downtown Newcastle, shooting back to the northwest. I'm looking up 44. Okay. There's a tremendous amount of traffic coming
southbound.
Take
Jim's audio off there. We need David on there.
And as the day went on, he seemed more and more agitated to the point of even getting cross with his storm chasers. Help me understand his mindset on that day. It seemed like the storm changed him.
Well, part of it is that there was a tension between Gary and some of his storm chasers. He felt like that they were taking too many risks. And it was not only stressing him out to worry about, you know, keeping viewers safe, but he was worrying about his own staff and the level of their excitement about the storms. And he worried about people yelling and screaming and scaring people. And so, you know, if you watched if the Moore tornado coverage and then, but really it hit it with the El Reno storm because you know, that storm was crazy. It changed direction so many times. It was so massive. And unfortunately, you know, a few storm chasers were killed. But it's a miracle more weren't, because there were so many right there and it just turned on them. And I think the 2013 storm season was kind of a turning point for Gary. He had been on air for so long. And, you know, they had told him at Channel 9, you know, we want you on air, you know, as long as you still love what you do. And he was just really starting to feel stressed out and not loving it as much as he did.
You spent so much of the book on Plaza Towers Elementary School in Moore, where 7 children died. And in many ways, it's what sets 2013 apart from the other major tornado in recent memory, May 3rd, 1999. Tell me about the mood at Plaza Towers on the morning of May 20th, leading up to the storm.
Well, I think like everyone that morning, the people at Plaza Towers woke up knowing that it was going to be bad weather. And the National Weather Service had been putting out warnings saying, well, there could be a possibility of storms hitting around the time the kids were let out of school. And, you know, they were sort of anticipating that it could be bad weather. But I don't think anybody in their minds even imagined a storm like what happened that day. And so I centered that chapter, those chapters a lot around Amy Simpson, who was the principal of that school, who is such an amazing lady and kept it together somehow and on that day. And, you know, going back, I still don't know how she did it. I mean, it's so incredible. But she, you know, wanted to keep it sort of, it was one of the last days of school, and she wanted to keep sort of things normal for kids. They had a bunch of you know, ceremonies marking the end of the year for, you know, some of the classes. And she was interviewing teachers for the next school year to hire them. And, you know, she had one of her assistants who was always keeping an eye on the weather for them. And during the day, there was emails from Moore Public Schools, you know, we're keeping an eye on the radar. There could be storms coming through, so be weather aware. But it was really later in the day that one of her assistants came in and she just saw the look on her face and she knew it was bad. And she looked out the window and there was starting to be sideways rain and so forth. And then she walked out in the hall and she just saw parents running down the hallways frantically trying to get their kids. And she just really willed herself to keep it together and try to keep people calm so that the kids wouldn't be scared, because, you know, there was no storm shelter in that school. And so the kids that were left really had nowhere else to go but to stay in the hallways. And she just wanted to keep it as calm as possible.
She really winds up being the central figure of the book, just the way she kept calm through the day as it sadly turned from a rescue operation to a recovery operation, especially with those third graders. I mean, she was really able to keep it together up until the end. What is it about her that where she was able to be such a rock for that school and that community?
You know, I mean, I just think that's who she is. She's, you know, this person that is, when you talk to her, I mean, she just is, she's very calm and very composed. And An interesting thing about her is that her mother, and I didn't learn this until much later, that her mother had been in a tornado years earlier. And in fact, like when she was a kid, a really bad tornado where she was separated from her family. And so that was something, you know, she'd been bad around weather all of her life and had heard stories from her mother about that terrible storm. And so Amy Simpson was no stranger to bad weather, and she had grown up in Moore and, you know, had even, like those kids, spent time, you know, taking her tornado precautions and practicing for the possibility of a storm. And she just, I don't think she ever imagined that day being in the path of a storm like that. But once she was, there's something inside her just clicked. I mean, she felt like it was her responsibility, you know, to keep her staff safe, to keep her kids safe as much as she could. I mean, you know, I think if she could have stood outside and somehow held up her hand and held that tornado away, I think she would have. I mean, that's obviously something you can't do, but she just felt like it was her duty to remain calm because no one else was remaining calm. And unfortunately, you know, I mean, her husband is a firefighter, and so she knows what the terms mean when she hears, you know, recovery versus rescue. And so, you know, she knew early on that there was death at that school, but somehow she felt it was her duty to keep it together, and she wanted to tell the parents, and at one point she even scales the pile to peer down so she could try to identify the kids, and her husband ended up dragging her away, you know, saying you don't want to see something like that. But she just wanted to help the parents, and she wanted to help her students, and sometimes that was, you know, to her own, you know, detriment, because she didn't cry that day, but then she broke down the next day, and she's cried many days since.
Where is she now? How's she doing?
She's still a principal, but she's at a different school, Southlake Elementary, which is one of the new schools that were built in Moore. Her daughter actually goes to Plaza Towers, though, now, and so she's still around there quite a bit. But she, you know, I think, like, Amy, just like everybody else that was in that school that day, you just don't get over something like that. And so I think she struggles just like everybody else. It's hard for her. Especially whenever you live in Moore, Oklahoma, where it's been very, very stormy lately.
And why Moore? I know there's no scientific data to back up a reason that that city gets hit more than any other part of the state, but as you talk to people affected by this, residents who lived in the neighborhoods around Plaza Towers and Briarwood Elementary Schools, how do they answer that question?
I don't think anybody has an answer to that question, but they look for it. You know, I asked scientists. I know that Steve Eddy, who's the city manager of Moore and who has rebuilt his city so many times now, has asked people, and nobody knows. It's just bad luck, is what they say. But what's interesting about Moore, and it's just there's this sense of fatalism. They know they're going to get hit again. And even now, they know they're going to get hit again. And a few days ago, I went to visit Steve Eddy, and he was telling me that just lately that, you know, they gather in the emergency command center and they wait out these storms. And by the way, they have, you know, City Hall was in the crosshairs of that of the May 20th storm at one point. And so they happen to now have a facility across the street that's tornado proof so that they can go there and watch these storms come and feel safe themselves, because at some point, you know, they were worried that they were going to get hit. And if they get hit, what's going to happen to who's running the city and so forth. But he just described, you know, a scene a couple of days ago in which somebody said, you know, this is like waiting for an execution. And, you know, it's such a dire thing to say, but I absolutely get what he means, because it's like they know they're going to get hit again. I mean, because they always do. And so it's just they sit there and they watch the radar and hold their breath and pray. And that's all they can do.
There was even a point where I think you quoted Moore Mayor Glenn Lewis, and he uses humor a lot, especially in media interviews, as a way to kind of diffuse the tension of the disasters he's been through. And it's been several now. And one of the things I recall him saying was that Moore gets hit so often because they know how to deal with it and they know how to respond, and they're able to do it better than any other community possibly could. Finally, you closed out the book with an epilogue on May 20th, 2014. A year later, you came back to Oklahoma to cover that anniversary. What was that experience like?
It was sad. I mean, it was bittersweet. I mean, on one hand, it was, I think you try to focus. I mean, there's obviously 24 people that were killed that day, and then an older woman later succumbed to her injuries months later. And you think about the kids who died, the seven at Plaza Towers, and the two babies that were killed along the path. But you also have to step back and realize how many people lived. I mean, it's a real miracle. And I often think about Robert Romines, who is now the superintendent of Moore, told this story about going to Briarwood and coming up on the scene and seeing this school demolished, and he was convinced that people were dead. And he went through the school and was going through one of the hallways, and it was dark, and he had his cell phone out because that's all he had. And he was shining his cell phone looking for people. And suddenly he caught this little glinting in one corner, and he realized it was kids smiling at him. And, you know, the way he was seeing them was the cell phone light was shining on their teeth, and he said it was like the happiest thing he'd ever seen. But then there's, you know, on the flip side of that is that, you know, there were people that were lost. And I came back and I went to this assembly at Plaza Towers where all the little kids, you know, were gathered and some of the parents, you know, to sort of mark this really terrible day. And they played a slideshow of the kids who died, and all the adults were really worried about what effect this would have on the kids. And at one point, I remember they were playing the slideshow, and one of the teachers that was sitting there began to cry. And I saw this little girl grab her hand and just squeeze it. And it reminded me of something that Amy Simpson had said, which is, you know, throughout the year, she was just had marveled at how resilient the kids had been. You know, they had still had some problems, and, you know, they had gone through art therapy and, as she put it, learned the difference between good clouds and bad clouds. But in the end, it was the kids who were just strong and moving on. And it was the adults, she said, that were struggling. And so that really, watching that scene of that child, you know, comforting the adult, it was just really powerful to me.
And now it's 2015, and you've been in Oklahoma for several days, and we've arguably had some of the worst severe weather throughout the month of May since those 2013 storms, more than two dozen tornadoes, severe flooding, feet of rain, not inches, feet. Mm. What's gone through your mind as you've been here this month?
I worry about the people in Moore because, you know, they're so strong and they try to be so resilient and they rebuild again and again. But it's the emotional and the invisible damage that's harder to overcome. And we're talking about people in a city where that jump when, you know, the emergency sirens are tested now. And that's something, you know, happens every Saturday at noon. And so it's just something, you know, severe weather is just something that happens in Moore. And, you know, when I grew up here, you just knew it and you dealt with it. But I worry, you know, about the people in Moore because they've just been hit so hard so many times. And at some point it just becomes so much and it's such a test. And so that's sort of something that I've been thinking about, especially as just, again, storms rolling through after, you know, a really quiet year in 2014, which I'm grateful for, but I wish it could be quiet forever there.
Holly Bailey, the author of the book, The Mercy of the Sky, which looks back at the May 20th, 2013 tornado in Moore. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with Holly Bailey, a national correspondent for Yahoo News, who's just written the book, The Mercy of the Sky, that chronicles the May 20th, 2013 tornado that killed 25 people in Oklahoma. You can read an excerpt of her book on our website, kgou.org, and we've also shared this interview on Facebook and Twitter at KGOU News. You can follow Holly and a lot of her latest work covering the Boston Marathon bombing trial at HollyBDC. Stay tuned next for OETA's Oklahoma Forum with a roundtable discussion of the 2015 legislative session with several state capitol reporters. For KGOU and Oklahoma Voices, I'm Brian Hartzinski.